The following episode of How Did This Get Made is sponsored by LegalZoom. They're helping keep the show free. If you go to LegalZoom.com and enter the code EARWOLF, you'll get a discount and 100% of what you spend there comes directly back to the show. LegalZoom is the best place to help with your legal needs. They're not a law firm, but they provide self-help services at your direction. For more information on how to support this show and the rest of the EARWOLF podcast network, go to EARWOLF.com/insider.
A tough guy hitman with a heart of gold, a criminal lesbian, and a retarded man all become best friends after they take him hostage in a movie called Geely. We saw it, and you know what time it is.
Now it's time for How Did This Get Made? We're gonna have a good time, celebrate some failure, not just be a hater. Did you know you wonder how did this get made? Let's wallow in the mediocrity of subpar art. Perhaps we'll find the answer to the question, how did this get made?
Hello, people of Earth. Welcome to How Did This Get Made? I am your host, Paul Scheer, joined as always by June Diane Raphael and via Skype, Jason Mantzoukas. How are you both?
Good.
Great.
This is the podcast where we try to make sense of the movies that make no sense. Each week we have a special guest with us. This week is no different. You've known her from a lot of different things. You've seen her on Comedy Central, on the Spike Show Players. Please welcome Danielle Schneider.
Hi there.
How are you?
I'm good. I should tell you that I was an accomplished voiceover artist. So.
Ooh, wow. So
you have a voice on your hands. You have a golden
You're listening to a voice.
Yes.
All right, so let's talk Geely. First thing I want to say about this movie is...
Oh, my God.
It's fucking 2 hours.
Oh, my God.
It's 2 hours. It's a long haul for a shitty movie. Like, I thought like this would be like an 88-minute movie. Like, you couldn't even make the hour and a half mark.
I watched it on my computer, and you know how it sort of like times it out for you? Mm-hmm. And like, I just kept going like, there's so much more left. Like, you can
feel like an hourglass. I feel like at the end, like the last 40 minutes, it's kind of felt like people like at a house party, like, we don't want to leave yet. It's still fun, isn't it? And it's like, no, just get out of the house. We're done with you.
The first 45 minutes of this movie is all exposition.
Yes.
Yep. Oh.
And it's all redundant exposition. It's like new characters enter and explain the whole plot we already know to other new characters.
But don't you understand that sometimes when the characters are talking in this movie, I don't even understand what they're talking about. They're talking in code, and I'm like, what?
It was like rhymes and riddles and rub-rub-a-dub. Yeah. I could not. There were monologues. There were sex monologues. There were crime monologues that I could not make.
Well, it also felt like monologues.
Yeah. Like, how many movies multiple page long like when she gives that monologue to the gangster kids.
That was her
Samuel Jackson moment in Pulp Fiction. You know what I mean? It was just like, but it was so unintense. Like, it was like, I felt like the kids were like, when do we get to leave?
I
felt like that movie, the movie should have been like, she says that whole thing and the kids are like, yeah, we're gonna rape her, right?
The best part of that though is the very end when Ben Affleck grabs, as he's walking out to get his in, he grabs one of their computers, throws it on the ground, and then says, suckmydick.com. What?
Because that's from an era when .com jokes were hilarious.
Well, also the fact that there were these white ruffians sitting, and white gang
with computers out.
Yeah, of course.
The white gang is basically, they're playing music loud in a restaurant, like a shitty chicken restaurant.
Like on a beach hut. Yes.
Yeah. And they're like, and you know, Ben Affleck is like, hey, turn that down. And they're like, fuck you. And then J-Lo goes over and delivers, just to clarify this monologue, about Muay Thai and about like how it's about plucking somebody's eyeball out and ripping out the optic nerve so they don't even remember what their friends and family look like.
But the rip that takes the past.
Again, this is where a monologue comes in, where like in real life you would be like, all right, stop talking. Like, if anyone started a monologue, I'd just be like, shut the fuck up, bitch, and walk away, or throw my computer at her, or, you know what I mean? She always had this threat of violence. Like, she could get violent, but she never felt threatened by
That's because she was reading those peace books.
So basically, we'll take it back for a second.
She was reading books that were just titled, like, peace.
And she was never very far through it. Did anyone notice that? Like, always she was always, like, 15 pages in.
But she's, but in scenes where she has the book out, she turns a page every 2 seconds. She's the fastest reader you've ever seen.
And yet couldn't get through any of the book.
So basically, the premise of the movie is Ben Affleck doing a good old-fashioned newsy voice, going, hey, that kid.
Why does everybody, this takes place in Los Angeles.
Yes.
Every character has a New York accent. Yep. Did anyone notice
that? With Ben Affleck's is Boston.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's not. It's no, like it's not. It's like I wish it was a Boston accent.
It felt
That's like
a 1920s.
Bronx accent. Yeah.
If, oh, man.
Everybody did. She did. Christopher Walken did. Al Pacino
did. Christopher Walken said Lenny. Privacy.
You knew
he's an LA cop.
You knew you were in for a bad movie when it's like dad jazz playing over the credits. Like the whole movie
the
is
underscoring
dad jazz.
Was
like,
unbelievable.
It's I feel like this movie was basically like it's Get Shorty meets Rain Man.
Oh God,
let's Midnight Run. I was in the middle of the movie. I was like, this is like a shitty version of Midnight Run. And then I realized it's actually written and directed by the guy who did Midnight Run.
Martin Brest.
Also, let's talk about the scoring too, because I never notice any music in a movie.
The scoring was unbearable.
So, like anytime the Justin Bartha's character, the retarded kid, talked about, you know, something sad, violins would come on. Did you notice that?
No.
Like when he started talking about the Baywatch girls, all of a sudden it's like, like, and it was like a moment in Glory or something. Yeah, like it was like it tried to give it like gravitas, but like
the music was unbearable.
So basically, just to clue everybody in on the plot, Ben Affleck is told to kidnap a mentally handicapped fellow who is Justin Bartha, but he's young. It's like baby Justin Bartha.
I didn't realize it was Justin Bartha till like he was on screen for almost a half an hour.
Really?
And then I screamed out loud in my apartment. Yes.
And then so Ben Affleck does that job with ease, gets the mentally handicapped guy out of the facility that he's in.
Although we don't see how.
No. He just walks him out. He just walks him right out.
Walks him right out without a problem.
Not a video camera.
No security.
Which you can
that
do.
Is really an indictment of the mental health system in America.
In Los Angeles,
He takes him out of
He's an important client. Like, he is the brother of the district attorney of Los Angeles.
Yes.
And nobody says a thing.
No one says a word about him. And then, because he's not doing his job well enough, even though he accomplished that job very well, they assign J-Lo, who is another... Is she a hitman? Is she a bounty hunter? It's also unclear what these people are.
Bad guys.
They're just bad guys.
Well, you can tell
with
by his
leather.
You can tell that Ben Affleck is a bad guy by his leather jacket and pompadour.
Okay,
that leather jacket upset me so fucking much.
When I saw that thing in the beginning of the movie, I was like, if I have to stare at this leather jacket for 2 hours, I'm gonna lose my mind.
Here, I did.
And this is how you know Ben Affleck is a bad guy. He goes, I wrote the rule of cool. I'm the original gangsta. Like, he literally says those two lines. I wrote the rule of cool.
The man who wrote this movie was like 70, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like in his mind, like, that's cool gangsta talk. Right. Like,
yeah, no, everybody talks like a fucking dildo in this movie.
At one point,
Ben Affleck says, I'm sitting here with Dykosaurus Rex.
Dykosaurus. Because J-Lo is a lesbian, which is all the dramatic tension.
Plot point.
But, okay.
This movie has the end-all, be-all of talking to yourself in the mirror scenes.
Oh! Yes.
Feel like, and I like, let me say that I like Ben Affleck. I think he's funny.
He's amazing.
On SNL.
This is a sad moment for him. Yes.
This was a low. This was a definite low in his life.
This and
well,
Jersey Girl.
Yes, this is a 1-2 punch that could have ended Ben Affleck's career.
That mirror scene was.
It kind of did for a little while.
Yeah. From 2003 to 2010.
This and Jersey Girl and his relationship with J-Lo almost destroyed him.
Yeah.
I will say about that scene, though, it made me sad. Because I feel like they just like were like, you be
go.
You.
Yes.
You be you. We're not going to give you any lines.
We're rolling the cameras and you just go.
Well, here's the thing.
Go, Ben, go.
He's trying to psych himself up to like look impressive in bed because for whatever reason, him and J-Lo are going to share a bed. Like, because he's like, oh, you can't sleep on the couch. You'll sleep in my bed. So he's trying to psych himself up in front of a mirror and like flex. But you're right. Like they said, like improvise.
And all he had was bull in the horns.
What
was like really upsetting about that scene is, like, I got the impression, yeah, he was psyching himself up to have sex with her. Like, that's what he was going in there to do.
It looked like he was getting ready to brutally kill her.
Rape
he
her.
He was doing, like, fight moves.
Yeah, he kept on flexing and punching.
Yeah, he's punching, he's lifting a... He has a dumbbell in the bathroom for some reason.
And he's like, he goes, this is the bull, this is the horn. This is the bull, this is the horn. It's like, what the fuck does that mean?
I want to know. I feel like this is something that happens in movies a lot, where people...
Talk to themselves
in the mirror and psych themselves up for sex in front of the mirror. I have never
done
that.
Let's do a quick survey. No. Has anyone here...
Psych themselves up.
At any time. Never. Not just for having
sex. Okay, there's two things I feel like people do in movies that I've never done and I genuinely believe people don't do. Talking to yourself in the mirror is one of them, like psyching yourself up to do something, especially sex. The other is, oh my God, I'm so overwhelmed, I'm so stressed, I have to splash cold water on my face. I've never been like, I need to cool my goddamn face down right now.
Gosh,
or there's another moment, too, where people are like washing their hands. It's all of these scenes take place in the bathroom, but washing their hands and then looking up and seeing themselves for who they really are for the first time.
Yeah.
I feel like also never happens.
They're washing their face and they're seeing their soul.
Yeah.
I want to just get into the mindset of Ben Affleck at this point is a huge star. J-Lo, huge star. This is the script? Like, the script where I am the hitman that has to bring the retarded kid, I have to hold the retarded kid hostage and then fall in love with a lesbian bounty hunter. It's like, that's what you gravitate towards? You could do any movie you want. You would imagine at this point, this is not a downward spiral.
Well, what I think they both really connected to was the love story in this. I really think that's why they signed on. They thought that that's a really sexy idea, that he wants to fuck her, but he can't because she's gay. But he's going to be the guy that fucks her so right that she's no longer gay.
Are you also talking about the fact that this movie does really say, like, lesbianism?
It's really upsetting. Offensive.
No, it's an interchangeable sexual orientation. Like, it is not set in stone. If you're a lesbian,
you just need the right man.
If the right turkey gobbles you up, then you are on the straight train.
Set straight.
Basically, Ben Affleck. Really, they go to visit Ben Affleck's mom. She goes,
whoa, wait a second. Back it up for a second. Ben Affleck's mom calls him and says, like, you gotta come over. The next shot after Ben Affleck gets that phone call is of an enormous ass.
Yes. Huge ass and a thong.
A fluorescent pink thong. And Ben Affleck is shooting his mother in the ass with a needle.
And we don't know why. Is it
some sort of diabetes?
I also thought, is this like a fertility medication?
Clearly she was getting it a lot.
She does say that if he doesn't come over to do it, she's going to have to ask their neighbor.
But we don't know what the shot is.
Yeah,
I think it's an insulin shot.
That or she's trying to have babies again. But basically, the mom says to J-Lo, immediately, J-Lo walks in and she's like, I like you. You're going to get married to my son. And yeah, J-Lo has not said a word. And she goes, yeah. And then Ben Affleck's like, hey, mom, she's a lesbian. And
all Ben Affleck says in that scene is ma.
He goes, ma!
Ma!
Yeah.
Ma!
And she even at one point calls him out on it and says, what's with all the ma? And it was like, is the actress saying this? Is the character saying this? And why is she in a pink thong?
There are whole scenes like that where people, like, there's the scene where he goes, read to me, Larry. And J-Lo's like, read to him, Larry. And he's like, I'm not going to read to him. And he goes, read to me, Larry. And they just say the phrase, read to me or read to him, like 500 times in a row.
Well, talking about things that are said a million times in a row, here's something that's said quite a few times. The word fuck. Fuck peppers everything. I wanted to see if I'll play a quick game with you guys and see how many times you think the word fuck was used in this movie. Any guesses?
God.
Do you know?
I do know.
If there are like 100, I bet the script was like 125 pages. So if it's,
I would say one fuck every other page.
Probably. Oh, I'd say way more than that.
Really?
I'm going to say 250 fucks.
Really? I'm going to go like 75 or something like
I'm
that.
I'm going to go like 120
I
fucks.
Go low. Price is Right rules.
You know, June is almost exactly
on. Yes!
124 fucks.
Whoa.
120. That's a lot for...
Yeah, that's like one fuck a page.
That's one fuck a... What? I mean, that's one fuck a minute. Yeah. You really are getting one fuck a minute.
Wow.
Which is crazy. That's like on the level of... That's more than Scarface. Yeah. Like,
very.
Level of fuck.
Yeah. I feel like the most offensive...
Paul, you still maintain that page on the internet that's what a number of fucks per movie, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of work, but it's getting a lot of hits. We got
Jason,
100 hits. We got 100
it.
Hits last month.
It's,
unique hits.
It's the new Mr. Skin. I found the most upsetting part of the movie was the big vagina monologue.
Okay, yes. Let's...
I do think I might be a lesbian after watching
that
movie,
though. Did Eve Ensler write part of it?
I really felt like it was... Eve Ensler was like, why is she using my words? That was... And then at
Ben Affleck basically tells her...
Well, it's in response to a penis monologue.
Yeah, Ben Affleck gives her a monologue about how his penis is the most... the best sexual thing, right? Like, he says, like... What is it? It's like a 4-minute scene where
he's basically saying, like, everything is phallic-centered. Like, sex is male. I am.
Because basically his mom, we didn't say this, his mom literally tells J-Lo, who is a lesbian, keep an open mind.
Yep.
Keep an open mind. Experiment. And so this gets them into their sex talk.
And she also tells Ben Affleck that she's experimented in her past.
And he's like, So anyway, this goes into a 4 to 5 minute long scene, 2.5 minutes for Ben Affleck talking about the penis, and then 2.5 minutes of J-Lo talking about a vagina.
While she's doing
yoga.
And has a very prominent camel toe.
Yes. So right. prominent.
There was so much ass cleavage in this movie.
Wait, Lainey, because
every woman,
all two women, let's be honest, every woman, meaning all two women in this movie, I saw way, way too much of their ass.
J-Lo was doing that yoga. I mean, that was the only way. I feel like J-Lo was like, I want to do a monologue, an Eve Ensler-style monologue about the vagina. I was like, if you just do yoga and just pop your ass up for 2 minutes, we'll let you say whatever you want. Because every guy will just be watching your ass. Because that's all it is. It's like, she's just in the most seductive poses talking.
But then she switches over and, like, spreads her legs at some point.
I love it.
Full-blown beaver shots.
It was. With, like, you could see every aspect of her vagina. I saw an outline.
You guys, but this movie was so visually uninteresting that I appreciated everything that J-Lo was doing in terms of like what she was giving us with her body, because it was the only thing that was like fairly pleasant to look at.
Yeah, I agree.
She was gorgeous.
She looked gorgeous.
J-Lo, after seeing this in the backup plan, I'm like, yeah, she's a beautiful person.
She's gorgeous.
Beautiful. And I loved when she was... I loved the sex scene, I'm not going to lie. I love that she had sex with him with that kimono on.
I want to talk about that. I just want to finish talking about this. Because the J-Lo ends her monologue by going, wars have been fought over my pussy.
True. Yes.
I love her pussy monologue.
And she calls a penis a sea slug.
I agreed with every word of it. And she calls a penis a really long toe.
Or a sea slug. Now, when they decide to have sex, J-Lo says this. We have this clip. This is how J-Lo gets him into having sex.
It's turkey time.
Huh?
Gobble, gobble.
That's how she describes oral sex. It's turkey time.
I've never met a woman who wants to kiss for 1 second and then is ready for oral sex. Like, it was the craziest sequence. They kissed for 1 second.
I could introduce you to some girls.
I will say also, the kimono, to me, was such an obvious, like, she's a zen master. Like,
I loved it.
Where did she pack all this shit?
She had so many outfits. I thought about that as well. And a lot of accessories. Did anyone notice? Lots of jewelry. And it was also,
jackets, belts.
Buddha-based. Like, very sort of... And she never came in with a suitcase.
Never saw a suitcase. Nope. I hated this sex scene.
Why?
The sex scene because whenever you have a sex scene with two people who are dating in a movie, it's too fucking gross. It's like too sensual. It's like they're too into it. Like Kim Basinger and Alec Baldwin in The Getaway. It's like, oh, like I feel like you're watching like a real, like a sex tape where they're just like, It's not like, it's not sexy. It's like,
their sex becomes very precious.
Yeah, it's like, oh, they're just enjoying it too much. Or just, it's grody. It's grody. It's grody to me. It's way
it's
too
grody.
I want to see. I want to see.
Says it's
doesn't
grody.
Like lovemaking.
No, I want to see like I want to see two people who've never met each other fuck on camera because it's like it's new, it's interesting. These people are like no. Like, they're into it. They're like, America, we are such a good couple. Watch us fuck now. Watch
well,
how we...
I feel like this. The point of this movie was you get to watch them fuck.
Yeah.
You know, that's like, I feel like the selling point is you get access to what we all are thinking. Like, what's it like when they fuck?
I didn't mind it one bit.
Now, we don't even talk about the fact that J-Lo is a lesbian and her lesbian girlfriend barges over to the house midstream in the movie and slices her wrists.
This is actually a really offensive movie. Like, was there a big outcry from the gay and lesbian community? Because that's like every lesbian stereotype. It was like really horrible. It really was.
Like, and also on that fact, like, these people are like hit people or whatever. They're supposed to be pretty secretive and good at their jobs, and yet everybody can find them.
Sure.
And so,
oh, yeah.
So she didn't tell her lesbian, angry lesbian ex-girlfriend where she was, and yet she shows up at Ben Affleck's place, had no problem finding it.
Oh, everyone shows up at Ben Affleck's place, and at one point, J-Lo goes, do you want to go to a hotel? And Ben Affleck goes, no, I live here. Which is exactly the reason not to hide out in your house.
And then, when they go on the road, they're in a convertible.
Yes, oh!
In a convertible!
So obvious, but they put a ski cap on it because no one would suspect that this mentally handicapped brother of the district attorney would
might
be wearing
be in a hat.
Ski cap. So that's how they hide him. Totally out in the open in a big, 1950s convertible that no one else
Ben
is
Affleck
driving.
Sporting the most bowling shirts out of two and a half men.
Tony Soprano would be like, oh, yeah. It was like they just took his wardrobe.
I love that a big plot point is that Ben Affleck doesn't have any reading material in that apartment.
Oh, yeah.
So much so that when Justin Bartha says, read to me, he can only read off of like a toilet paper roll or the back of a box of some sort.
The Tabasco sauce.
That's really crazy.
And Charmin.
And wait, J-Lo's book centered so hugely throughout the movie that she could
doesn't
have offered
read from
up
that.
Some reading material.
Yeah. She just could have been like, read this book on peace.
Nope, I'm not going to share with you my book. You got to read the Charmin label.
Sun Tzu's. That blah blah blah. Oh yeah, who's Sun Tzu?
Yeah. Are you fucking kidding me right now with this Sun Tzu? All right, so the thing that we haven't talked about at all, and it's a huge plot point, is that Justin Bartha plays a mentally handicapped person who is a lot, everything that we just talked about, insert a mentally handicapped person in the scene who
full
was
retard.
Full retard.
Full retard.
But I will say, like, in the first time you meet Justin Bartha, he's in this home for the mentally handicapped.
Yes.
And surrounded by real mentally handicapped people.
Yes.
They are obviously.
Those are not extras playing.
And then all of a sudden.
You can't do that in a movie like this.
And then you see Justin Bartha, who looks like a young Tom Hanks, and you're like, he's cute.
Unless you are Daniel Day-Lewis, you can't surround an attractive young actor with actually physically and mentally handicapped people. It was like, he was like the pick of the litter in that group.
I was like, I would have dated him. I had no problem dating him. I don't care what.
And Justin Bartha's real, I mean, we're going to throw around this word, I'm sure, at points, retard. We only throw it around because it is crazy what he's doing in this movie, because basically they define retarded as someone who likes Baywatch and raps.
He cusses a lot.
Oh, yeah, yes. Yes.
Uh-huh. But that shit, he's really basically just doing Rain Man.
Yes.
Except substitute Baywatch
People's Court. Yeah.
You know, and shit like that. Like, it's a Rain Man, like, performance.
Just to give you a taste of his performance.
I thought he was pretty committed. I mean, I didn't.
He was committed.
He really was.
Whatever he was given, I thought he did the best with whatever he was given. It was just unwatchable.
It was him. Okay, well, here we go. This is a scene. Basically, Ben Affleck is told that he needs to cut off Justin Bartha's thumb. He's not going to do that. They go to the morgue to cut off a thumb.
With a plastic knife.
He's cutting off a thumb with a plastic knife. So let's hear Justin Bartha in this scene so you get an idea of what his character is like. Here we go.
I like big butts, and I cannot lie. The other brothers can't deny. When the girls walk in with the EB waist and round things in your face, you get sprung while pull up tough because you notice that butt was stuffed. Because I'm long and I'm strong and I'm down to get the friction on. So, ladies, you want to roll my Mercedes? Yeah. So, turn around, stick out. Even white boys got to shout. Baby got back. We go, we go, we go, we go.
I am cringing right now.
This was the part of the movie where I literally had to walk out of my house. Like, I had to leave my entire house. Like, I walked, I was just like, I need to leave this behind me.
This is the best scene in the movie.
And they timed the wicca wicca with the sound of the plastic knife cutting through the skin.
When can a and a bone. There's a bone. How can a plastic knife cut through a bone?
Also, Ben Affleck's character is not capable of dealing with a mentally handicapped person. He literally goes, he tries to beat him up. He tries to beat him up and he goes, what do you got, brain damage or something? You too stupid?
It's like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. He has said multiple times that he has brain damage.
You picked him up at a home for mentally disabled people, yes.
Oh my god. And then they have go ahead.
I'm sorry. Like, there were so many aspects of this movie that it was written in like 1995 or something and then brought to the screen in 2003 because Baywatch, Sir Mix-a-Lot, nobody had a phone when they needed it.
Yeah, no one had a cell phone. They were always calling on landlines.
I was like, this is 2003. I know that I was listening to Jay-Z at this point.
Also, Ben Affleck tries to trick Justin Bartha's character by always, like, Justin Bartha wants to go visit Baywatch, and he has to always tell him that Baywatch is closed. But now, instead of using his cell phone, which he uses in a scene, he pulls out a flashlight, and he talks into the flashlight.
That was really offensive.
And he's like, he goes, oh, yeah, got a walkie-talkie.
Can you imagine, like, the argument on set of being like, Martin, I don't understand. I have a cell phone. Why can't I just talk to myself?
Nope, you gotta really trick this dumb retard. You gotta give him a flashlight.
Can you guys still hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And, all right, the most disturbing scene to me was...
I might have lost you.
Nope, you're here. We can hear you. The most disturbing scene with Justin Bartha was when he goes, God bless you. And he go, and then Ben Affleck's like, thank you. He goes, no, when my penis sneezes, I say, God bless you. That was creepy. Like, so like when he comes. So when Justin Bartha comes.
Is that what that meant?
Yeah, when his penis sneezes. That's what I thought it was.
Of course.
Yeah.
I didn't understand that.
But we don't have penises, so we never know
when my
that.
Penis
it might feel like your penis is sneezing when you have an orgasm.
Is that what it feels like?
So.
Oh my god. And then
when I have an orgasm, it feels like my vagina
is
growing up.
So this is different.
What?
I thought they sneezed for real.
Yeah. We didn't get that.
Also, there's a great talk about penis in this movie when J-Lo's like, do you want to go in and cut off this guy's thumb? And he's like, sure. And she goes, not sure. Say, yeah. Because she goes into this whole monologue about, she goes, if I was going to suck your cock for 12 hours, you'd say yeah. You wouldn't say sure. Sure implies different levels of commitment. Do you guys remember that?
Yeah. I do remember that.
Also, sucking a cock for 12 hours does not seem like a pleasurable experience.
I don't think that anybody would get off on that experience.
Yeah.
That seems like exhausting.
I feel like if somebody said, I'm going to suck your cock for 12 hours, I'd be like, no, thank you, man.
No,
it would be chafed.
It would be upset.
I also love that before they had sex, at one point she said to him, like, she's like, you know, I think you're going to make a straight woman really happy. It's like, really?
Where are you getting that information?
Let's talk about the surprising cameos in the movie. There are two.
A number.
The first one is Christopher Walken. Christopher Walken enters the scene as, I don't even know what, a DEA agent?
He's a cop.
Who has some history with Ben Affleck. You think that he might come back. No.
Never does.
Never does. And this speech that he gives, you remember that amazing interrogation scene in True Romance? It's just like that, but if the writer was hit in the head by a brick for about 4 hours and then forced to rewrite this scene. Because it makes no sense. Here's a clip of Christopher Walken delivering one of the most confusing lines in that monologue.
Get me a big bowl. Pie, some ice cream on it. Good. Put some on your head. Your tongue would slap your brains out trying to get to it.
Wait,
interesting.
What? Wait, why would you put a pie on your head. Like, what? Why what would you?
Put a pie on your head, put some ice cream on it, try to eat your brains out.
Your mouth would slap your brains out to get to the pie on your head.
Whoa.
So the pie wouldn't be enough. You'd have to put ice cream on it, and then your mouth would slap your brains out.
Was that written? Like, are those lines on a script page?
Walken is like, hey, Martin, so I'm just like, when I get to this, should I just say slap your brains out?
I mean, that was like someone trying to write a Christopher Walken monologue and failing on every level.
It was a moment that I had to rewind because I wasn't sure if I was seeing it or I was so bored in the movie that I was fantasizing that this was
happening. Like an alien wrote it. I didn't understand what he was saying. But that performance has nothing on the other surprise cameo.
No.
Al Pacino comes in, again, for one scene. Al Pacino comes in, and I think he got paid by the volume.
Mm-hmm.
Because he gets exponentially louder as the scene goes on. Take a listen to Al Pacino.
Mr. Stockman.
I know my fucking name! You piece of shit!
Oh, my God.
You don't try to extort a federal fucking prosecutor! And if you do, you don't fuck around!
Wow.
Fuck this. Cutting off his thumb was a stupid order, and we would have been derelict in our responsibilities if we had followed it.
That is... J-Lo standing up to Al Pacino.
Al Pacino has... They don't have this on it, but he has literally come to sound like Ethel Merman. He's like, what is going on here? Like, he doesn't sound human anymore. Yeah.
The best part of that scene, though, was when... And I don't think it's in the clip you played, but... I think when he starts on his rant, he shoots the number two in the head almost immediately when the scene starts, and then is screaming on a couch to a dead man.
Yes,
for like almost a minute.
Yes,
which is amazing to watch.
Oh my God! Oh my.
This whole—I feel like people wanted to do this movie because they were like, "Ooh, juicy monologues."
Yeah, I think you're right, Jason.
It's not that often you see like a feature length movie that has like this many like
monologues
huge monologues
you can sink your teeth into.
Yeah. And I feel like they all were like, "Yeah, let's get into that." And then in shooting, must have been like, "Oh no, we've made a horrible mistake."
It really is. It's like, this should have been a great movie. Al Pacino, Christopher Walken, Ben Affleck on top of his game, J-Lo being hot, the guy who wrote, directed Beverly Hills Cop and Midnight Run. Everything should have worked in this movie, but failed. And the ending is the perfect encapsulation of it. They are running out of town to escape Al Pacino, who's going to kill them. And as they're driving, the whole movie, Justin Bartha, all he wants to do is see Baywatch. They're shooting Baywatch.
Well,
or what, something looks like Baywatch. They couldn't get David Hasselhoff
for a cameo. Like Beach Bunny, Bikini, Frankie, and Annette movies.
from 40 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, this man is 70 years
basically,
old.
Basically, and then now this kid...
One of those.
They come across the set of Gidget.
That's what it seemed like.
And the whole movie, just about, they're like, Baywatch, take me to Baywatch, Baywatch, Baywatch. They go by, they're literally across the street from it. Can we go to Baywatch? And he's like, no. Why? You're there. Like, what?
Why ever
like,
not?
Let the kid run around for two fucking seconds. Like,
well, then he gets finally into the Baywatch Gidget movie, and they're like, and start shooting. So he's
by the way, can we talk about that? The director or whatever? The laziest set guard. All right, guys, can we just get the set as soon as possible? Like, not like there's no one has ever been on
a set. I also love, though, before they walk down to the beach, first they're just looking at the Baywatch set, and then Justin Bartha's like, can I go down there? And Ben Affleck, I guess, has so much knowledge of movies and sets. He's like, no, you can't go down there. They're shooting.
And why does he care?
No, it's a closed set. Closed set.
But then also, they start shooting. The AD says, like, we're ready to go shooting this movie. Everyone is dressed in bikinis except for Justin Bartha, who's in a winter coat.
A hoodie.
As any good AD, I think you would see this guy sticking out that he doesn't belong in the movie.
Big master shot.
I think something's wrong. Costumes, wardrobe, get over here.
No, that AD is too busy just chatting. He's like, okay, come on, guys, find a partner. As that old song goes, find someone to love. It's like, what the fuck is this AD doing? I've never met an AD that's so kind and so chilled. Like,
so yeah. Like, whatever happens, happens.
And it wasn't clear if it was a music video, if it was a scene where they're dancing on the beach. And it's also like, really, this movie got Al Pacino and Christopher Walken? You couldn't get a cameo from David Hasselhoff or Pamela Anderson? Like, but meanwhile, the retarded guy picks up a hot girl.
Of course. By the way, happens to be Australian.
And then isn't Ben Affleck standing like 20 feet away at this point? Why can he hear the conversation that he's having with the Australian girl? Because he notices that she's Australian from very far away.
Oh, my God. And he's smiling. And this is when the movie feels like, End. It's like, nope, just strengthening out, lengthening out.
And this is where they're playing music. Again, here comes in the music. they're playing, it's like the end of Glory.
Yeah.
It's a huge
swell. I love that the glory is your reference.
It is, because that is like that music where you're like, oh, the troop is dead. Raise the American flag. It's a huge moment. And then
Glory.
Sorry, everybody dies at the end of Glory. But yeah, and then it's this really stupid moment that has no deserve the
Ben Affleck teaches him how to pick up a girl by going, just ask her, nice weather we're having, isn't it? And
I gotta say, though, that moment made me really bummed out, because I felt like it really did, like, this girl
isn't gonna end up with him.
Like, he should be going to the home that he was living in and meeting women there. Like, but I'm sorry, it was really a bummer
to
me.
Wow. I thought that he could end up with this girl.
Here's the thing, he was good looking enough. I don't think girls
are that picky. I think that, like,
Ben Affleck turned a lesbian in this movie. Why can't a retard seduce a hot actress?
A hot Australian actress.
All right, fine.
Well, clearly we had some issues with this movie, but I think now it's time for a second opinion. These are people on Amazon.com who gave the movie a 5-star rating. So here are some of their reviews. We can talk about them, as always. Okay, here's the first one. This is from Beyonce Williams.
Really?
Beyonce?
Yeah, that's the code name.
She's gonna chime in.
She's chiming in.
Really?
This is a very good movie to watch. And what the critics were saying about this movie is the worst is not true. Okay, so that was a very simple one. Here's one. I saw it with my chick, so I was expecting it to be a chick flick, but it turned out to have a little action mixed in with all that romantic junk. So, 5 stars for this chick flick.
Oh my God. 5 stars?
5 stars.
Out of how many?
I guess 5. This one is from Matthew Bellow. If you're a fan of rom-coms, Ben Affleck, J-Lo, or just like interesting genre mashups in general, you can't help but have this one missing from your DVD collection. If only all romantic comedies were as bold as this. If you give this film less than 4 stars, you obviously don't understand what Julie was going for, because it's way beyond your typical run-of-the-mill romantic comedy. For those of you looking for a unique and different film that will make you think, then get your copy of Julie today.
Wait, is this a comedy?
Well, here's
what
this
part
one.
What part was funny?
It's a rom-com.
Wait,
it's a genre mashup. That was Matthew Bellow on Amazon.com.
Oh, Matthew Bellow, MB, or is it Martin Brest?
Oh!
Interesting.
I will leave
Did
you.
Did any of the other members of Destiny's Child chime in?
No, they're not.
Kelly Rowland writes in.
And this is the final one that I like. I'm not stupid. I got a 1500 on the SATs.
All right, go on.
Okay, we're listening.
But I thought this film was all right. Jen looks very good, as does Ben. There are some bad scenes. Ben's mom getting poked with a needle in the butt. But it was okay. I rented it because I heard the hype was so bad and I wanted to see how bad it was. But it wasn't so bad after all. I've seen many films, i.e. The Pledge, Snatch, Phone Booth, and those were a lot less entertaining. 5 stars.
I like that his credentials for judging movies is having seen 4 other movies.
The Pledge, Snatch, and Phone Booth. Those are what he judges all movies by.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. I'm Scott Aukerman, host of Comedy Bang Bang and co-founder of Earwolf, the podcasting network that all these shows you're listening to are reside within. And we're super excited that our shows are now available on funnyordie.com on the front page. A very exciting partnership. And for anyone who is new to listen, we wanted to let you know that we have two free iPhone apps. The main Earwolf app, where you can listen to every show we've ever released, our entire catalog, create your own playlists, look at pics, which is what I call pictures from the studio, and even comment on the forums. We have message boards out there. And then we also have a second app, Earwolf Live, which tells you when your favorite comedians are performing in your neck of the woods in the upcoming months, and it makes it easy to buy tickets, invite your friends. So check out both of those apps and get both of those, and be sure to follow us on Twitter at Earwolf, and be sure to check out our forums. Check out whatever you like over there on earwolf.com for great conversations about the shows. And now back to the show you're listening to, and I'll see you at the movies.
Oh, my gosh.
What really upset me, the title really upset me, too.
Geely?
Well, it didn't mean anything.
It meant nothing.
No, and how often they were like, mispronounced his name, then he had to be like, it's Geely. Like, it rhymes with like, really.
Yeah.
And it happened like three times, and then they sort of dropped it. I thought it was going to be some sort of ongoing thing where at the end she gets his name right or something. Like,
no.
I thought it would pay off in some huge way.
Not at all. This movie does not pay off in any way, but I highly recommend you watching it.
I was just going to say one quick question. When they are at the FedEx, like, parcel post place.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, and they're about to send the thumb out.
Yes.
In an envelope. She has this moment of connection with the woman who works there. Were we supposed to believe that they had already been together or that they were going to be?
She said close personal.
But I still don't know what that means because I didn't get, like, wouldn't you say hi?
All lesbians have fucked each other. That's what it is. All lesbians have fucked each other. They're all Eskimo brothers.
And then why did she have the Eskimo brothers? What does that mean?
Eskimo brothers are like guys who have slept with the
same
woman.
Same girl, yeah.
Oh. Well, I also didn't understand why the wardrobe choice to have her wearing a big cross around her neck. Did anyone notice that? That the
because she'll be paying for her sins in hell for being a lesbian.
I guess so. But I still didn't know what was happening. I thought they were in on a secret, like an inside joke.
Everything in this movie that's set up to come back never pays off.
Never.
Al Pacino doesn't come back. Christopher Walken doesn't come back. The girl doesn't come back. The suicidal girl doesn't come back. No, Justin Bartha.
By the way, does a really poor job at committing suicide.
Yes. Oh, she just slices her wrist. I mean, this movie.
Guys, let's be honest. That was just a cry for help. It wasn't an honest
thing. And I also, let me just talk about the suicide problem real quick, was also that when she tries to commit suicide, no one is upset or like, oh my God, they're like pissed at her.
They're like, oh, you're bleeding on the fucking floor.
Everyone's pissed at her for committing suicide in their house.
Guys, loves that apartment so much.
This movie is retards, lesbians, suicidal people. Like, this movie goes after, this movie makes a mockery of everyone.
Genre mashup, bro. If you don't like genre mashups, get out. And now it's time for some viewer mail.
You've got mail, baby, yeah.
We asked you to come up with a better title for the movie Geely. You guys actually submitted all your responses on earwolf.com and on facebook.com. Not just general Facebook, we have a page, check it out. And we actually asked you to come up with a better, more appropriate title for the film Geely. Something that really articulates what this film is about. We got actually a ton of responses this week, and I'll start off with my favorite three. I'll start and actually end with my favorite three. Steve Q writes, "The Gangster, The Lesbo, and The Full Retard." Not bad. Michael Cusimano takes Geely in a different direction by just calling it Shitly. Or Shigly. Maybe that's how you pronounce it. And of course, Alice Stevenson comes up with the title, Inappropriate Conversations at Inappropriate Times with Inappropriate People. I think that might be the winner. It's a good, nice big title. Thank you so much for tuning in. As always, you can find me on Twitter at Paul Scheer.
At Miss June Diane.
At Danielle Stuff.
And
I'm not on Twitter.
Now, Danielle, you have a show coming up in L.A. for people who are listening in L.A.
Yes. If you like reality shows and you like to make fun of them, it's called This Shit's For Real. And it's at the UCB Theater September 22nd. At 8 o'clock. So come on by.
Go check it out. And as always, check out NTSF SD SUV on Adult Swim at 12:15 on Thursday nights. Stars June and myself.
And Danielle.
Yes, she was in the Dolphin episode. So thank you guys so much for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.
Earwolf. This has been an Earwolf Media production. Executive producers Jeff Ulrich and Scott Aukerman. For more information, visit earwolf.com.
Earwolf Radio, boom.com. The wolf dead.